When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Ah, Los Angeles. Beautiful Los Angeles. I swear they don't pay me every time I say that. It's sunny out here.
It is. Keep going.
Ah.
Move.
We're trying to get some light because we've been inside all day seeing video games in the dark. And we need the energy of the sun's light.
Not that dark. There are lights.
I saw Detroit Become Human. It was pretty dark. Oh, we just got back from seeing a bunch of Sony games, actually. We just stacked our Sony appointments. We still have a couple more later in the week. But right now, we saw Detroit Become Human.
Yep.
I saw Knack 2.
You played Knack 2?
I played Knack 2 for like...
You talked to Mark Cerny.
Mark Cerny. I saw for like 30 minutes. I got the hot scoop. Wait, is that you?
But you can have it for Cerny.
Okay.
Yeah, license the scoop.
And you saw Spider-Man and
Spider-Man and God of War. We didn't play most of those games.
Yes.
And most of these are presentations with
true.
Expanded versions if you watch the press conference.
Yep.
Like these are like slightly elongated versions with like a Q&A session. So we learned a little bit more about them. Like I'm curious. I want to know more about Detroit.
Okay. So
I pushed you into this appointment because I wanted you to do more. And you also talked to David Cage.
I did talk to David Cage. I'm going to try to do a transcribed write up of just what that conversation was sometime this week if I can find time. If not this week, next week.
Yeah.
So Detroit Become Human, for people who don't know, is the latest from Quantic Dream.
Heavy Rain, Beyond Two Souls, Fahrenheit, or not Fahrenheit.
Indigo Prophecy. Story heavy games, lots of quick time events to
your choices matter.
Your choices matter, branching pathways in the narrative. This is a near future, or close future, as they said multiple times. Close future game set in Detroit, in a world in which androids have replaced much of the workforce.
Automation takes over.
People are upset and are unhappy because they're unemployed. And you play as three different androids. The two that we've seen so far are Connor, who's like a detective, and then Marcus, who's like a revolutionary, who's freeing the androids.
Well, there's like androids that are still quote unquote slaves, and there are androids who have been like woken up or like unchained. I can't remember the term that was used in the trailer.
Deviants. They're called deviants.
Deviants.
Because Connor, the detective, who's played by a guy named like Rick Deckard. Which is the name actual name,
right.
Is a deviant.
His parents loved Blade
Runner. And so does David Cage. And today's demo was the one with Marcus. We're getting this helicopter.
Just show the people
this
where
is
it's coming
Los
from.
Angeles. All
this right. is what it is.
It is what it is. This is natural. This is verite. That's what we call it in the biz. today's demo was about Marcus, who was going with another character to kind of free a bunch of the androids from an android shop.
Okay.
Crash a truck into the front of the building, get them out.
And the presentation was about in a mall area where they were going to break into one of the shops where there are androids. You're back. We get it.
They don't want
we
us to talk about androids. They don't want us. They don't want the truth to get out.
And both of them, it's sort of like you're making choices in terms of how you're going to respond to the police, how you're going to respond to the public perception.
The police show up. Do you hide? Do you try to act natural, or do you just give up on the mission and run away because the stakes are too high? And then hey, you have to deal with a drone. How do you deal with it? And there's some cool stuff in terms of pure problem solving and kind of puzzle solving, if that makes sense.
Where,
you don't just hack the drone and the drone goes away. Instead, it does a thing where I can see where the drone's path is, and because you're an android, you go into android vision. They call it they call it the mind palace. Where you can see all the androids' motions and then do precognition. It's what would happen if I jumped up to that ledge and then to that ledge?
Oh, so rather than blindly making a decision, you get maybe not the consequence of it, but a preview of where it might happen.
Exactly. This fucking helicopter. On top of that, though, there is the second thing, which is you free the androids, and this is the critical decision here is what do you do once you free them? You win them over in a really cringy speech about androids being our people.
Like, does he stands up on something and he's looking down on them?
He looks down on them and then they go, "We're with you, Marcus."
Oh, I was in the that was in the press conference trailer.
It's bad. It's like not
and they're not emotive and not in like a
Android
way. It's just like there should be animations. Like,
let's
show some.
There's no emotion.
Yeah.
There's no emotion engine in their face, which historically
should have made it on PS3.
Should have exactly so. At that point, you then have to make this decision, which is, it's time to show humans a message. How are you going to do it? And the answer is either going to be violently or pacifistically. And it's really binary. It's really brutal. It's like, do you make a fire or do you like leave a spray-painted message of peace? And it's really hokey, and it feels like it doesn't understand how protests or riots happen at all.
We're treating them as a binary, like what, like...
Well, so it's like, there are a bunch of actions you can do. There's a thing that pops up on screen that is a scale, that is a spectrum from hyper-pacifistic to hyper-violent.
Right.
And you have to, I mean, I don't know, maybe you could leave it in the middle and get through that scene. But for us, for the demo I saw, every step throughout this era, you were making a decision about whether to be super violent or pacifistic.
Right.
And even that stuff was really blurry sometimes. Like, there was a bit where you had to hack a message board and you could put up your own, like, propaganda.
Okay.
And that was violent for some reason in this demo. At least that's what I saw. Maybe that was a glitch or maybe I missaw it, but that's what I saw.
I saw just, like, the and this is the worry with a lot of David Cage games and the worry with this game in particular. It's, like, the politics of, like, assigning binary sort of, like, passive, you know, violent. Like, it feels... weird. Like,
it's reductive.
It's understandable that there would be different consequences for different actions,
right.
Public perception.
Public perception should change, and he talked about that afterwards.
But giving it a meter and assigning it. Like, what I would far prefer, and this is what I had a problem with, like, the Paragon Renegade system of BioWare, is, like, I'm much more inclined to make a decision that feels natural, organic to how I want the story to play out if I'm not being told how it's going to be perceived and interpreted by the game. And by already assigning it as sort of, like, anachronistic or aggressive or violent is maybe going to make me think twice about that.
There was this moment, so the demo that they gave us, he did violent, right? And so he pushed down the statue, and that was super violent. Also, like, no one gets hurt in the violent stuff. It's just breaking property. We have a whole other conversation about but at the end of it, Marcus, who's the lead character, who's making the decision to do violent protest, which does include things like throwing Molotov cocktails or like bombs into buildings and stuff, not hurting anybody, but destroying property.
Right.
He goes like, We've done the violent option now. Now people will be afraid of us.
He says
and
that?
And they won't trust us.
He says we've done the violent option?
He doesn't say that. But the rest of that he does say.
Okay.
He's like, we've been violent. You know, he's like, but it is very stilted. And it is very like, it's a shame. Like, Jesse Williams is a decent actor.
Right.
And who has his head on straight about activism and about protest. And generally, he's someone who has historically spoken in a way that reflects that he understands that when protest gets violent, it's not because someone's like, I'm going to be a violent protester.
Right.
It's because tensions are high and something triggers something.
There are domino effects to everything.
Exactly. And this is not that. This is, would you like to be a violent protester or a peaceful one? And the notion that, like, journalists and politicians will respond differently depending on those two things is fascinating and interesting.
And also true.
And also true, because, like, I mean, the
things
notion,
are spun in ways different than the actions on the ground.
And to his credit, David Cage said, like, I want this to feel nuanced. I want to be clear there isn't a good option and a bad option. That sometimes you do a thing that you think might be bad and it has a good knock-on effect later, and other times it's the other way around. You do what you think is the good thing, and then it turns out to not be so good.
Yeah.
But what I saw today didn't make me super, like, optimistic.
To see that nuance.
Totally. Beautiful game. It looked gorgeous, and I like the interaction. I like the precognition stuff a lot. I'm going to play that game.
Yep.
And it
mostly because, as with most David Cage games, I just have to know.
Right. Right.
I just have to know.
I just want
to
know. So that's where I'm with that. I'm going to think more on it. I'm going to write up that interview I did with him. What about you? You saw God of War first.
Yeah, they showed God of War. They showed, like, a slightly extended version of the trailer that was at the press conference. Okay. But, like, no hands-on, like, no, like,
a guided demo?
No guided demo.
So no
You know, but they talked about the intention. You know, we talked about on the podcast sort of, like, not really feeling the trailer. And so Corey Barlog, who, you know, has worked on the series in the past and is back for this one, kind of walked through, like, their intentions. And, you know, one of the takeaways from last year's trailer for the team was that fans were worried, like, well, how does combat work? And so they were trying to weave into this trailer a little more like, hey, it's God of War combat, which was not what we responded to in the original trailer. So I get this is getting more in, like, the nuts and bolts of mechanics. And so
nuts and bolts was here? Was that Magic Zoo?
No,
that's a different...
It's under embargo. Under embargo.
Okay.
And I actually had a chance to talk to him for about 10 minutes, because one of the things I picked up on in his presentation, one of the things I picked up on last year, like one of the things he told me last year when I chatted with him, was like, I did want to come back and make a game that was like one of the old games. Like, I wanted to go back to God of War, but it had to be like fundamentally different in some core way. And one of the things he talked about last year, and one of the things that he went into more in depth this year in our conversation, was that how much of an effect like having a child has had on him. Like, he has a 5-year-old son.
Okay.
And the nature of having a kid, you end up seeing just the world differently. And like, one of the things we talked about this on the podcast was maybe Kratos is just a bad
dad.
Bad guy, bad person that doesn't necessarily have to have a redeemable arc. Like, he doesn't necessarily like have to change to become a good person. Like, maybe it's possible. Like,
he's just a bad person, and then we, the viewers, see him being a bad person.
And that's what I posed to him. I was like, you know, I don't know the full context of the story. I don't know exactly where you're taking it, but like, maybe he's just bad, and like, every story doesn't have to be that. Like,
the
maybe
arc
they
redemption.
Can change. Right. And he said, well, he said, one, I don't subscribe to the nihilistic viewpoint that people can't ever change. So he's like, philosophically, I cannot make a game with a character who is like, you know, just people I know in my life, like, you know, he's like, you know, not saying he knows a Kratos, but in the spectrum
I think we all know a Kratos. We all know, go ahead.
Yep, that's, again, separate video.
Yep.
But he said, I just can't subscribe to that emotion that people are entirely irredeemable. Now, he said, change is a spectrum. And so, he's like, the end of the game is not that Kratos is a good person, is a good dad.
Okay.
It is like, what if it's something like much smaller? What is something like as simple as recognizing, like awareness? He's like, Kratos like changing could just be realizing like a broader spectrum of like his actions and consequences, not necessarily that he stops being a monster, that he stops really being a bad person.
Right.
And so that's sort of, he was like, he recognized sort of the inherent criticism of this is how this storytelling sort of goes,
and maybe
that's a little boring or predictable. And he said they're hoping to strike, but he did. He rejected the idea that Kratos could inherently never be redeemable in some respect. I was like, okay, and so
good for him for being upfront about that and not saying like you'll have to see when the game comes out. Like, he was able to voice what his kind of philosophy, his worldview was. And say, hey, that's not the type of art I want to make.
Yes.
So good on him for having that.
So interesting. I think we can still kind of tell like what that kind of game is going to play like. I guess I didn't notice in the trailers, but like there is some sort of the game is tracking, not rage, but like there's like an interaction between you and your son that like how you treat him, how you are paying attention to him is tracked by the game in some degree.
And
like,
in some way.
I don't know. Like, they were very cagey about like how that plays, but they were saying like your relationship with your son goes beyond just like the story beats and the cutscenes.
Okay.
And so I remain curious, especially as someone that really likes these games.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
I like what they're trying to do.
Yes.
And Corey, he spits a good game, so it's like I want to see what he does with this.
Did they connect it to previous God of War games at all in any way? Did they say, hey, this is a direct sequel?
It is. I mean, it is a continuum from the previous games. Yeah. They're sort of like purposely leaving out like.
It's like
ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
What happened in this,
that'll
like...
That'll be a Vita game. In the past, it would have been a PSP or a Vita game that connected the
yes.
dots.
Yes. Now it's a cutscene.
Oh,
or an app. Yeah, so I think that some of those gaps will be filled in. Also, maybe sounds like they'll leave some of that blank like, to be interpreted by sort of like the passage of time.
Sure.
So
I'm into that.
Yeah, I'm remain to be interested. And like, you know, anything else, I'm glad they seem to be trying to do something a little bit different
with
the series.
I'll let you know. I feel like you got the thing that maybe people wanted to get hands-on for action, the hard-hitting kind of tactical combat, explosive energy. I got the best action game at the PlayStation this year.
I shouldn't laugh.
I played some Knack 2.
Because you're about to lay down some Knack 2.
I'm about to Knack is back, baby.
He went away?
Knack, well, you know what? He was always here with me.
We joke. Nobody loved the first Knack.
Some people liked the first Knack.
Sure, that's probably fair.
It was like, in Mark Cerny's words, a family-oriented game. It was about getting people into games for the first time.
Yeah.
It was the sort of game where you could give your kid a PS4 or give your dad a PS4.
A simple platformer that also functioned as like a technical demo.
Exactly. Technical demo for all the moving pieces that you could show with the PlayStation 4. Knack is a little creature. He grows to be a big creature because he picks up new pieces. And in this, it's a little bit... I mean, he's still calling it a family game. He's still saying this is like... for people who want to get into gaming and get their heads around the controller.
This is not the Empire Strikes Back of the Knack trilogy.
No, it is not. It is, well...
Did you ask him if it's a trilogy?
I didn't. I fucked up. He wooed me with his knowledge of Knack and platformers. We talked about
his Knackology.
Exactly. He is a master of Knackology. He might be a doctor of Knackology. We actually had a really good conversation about the history of platformers. And we're like, what's up with Knack? Like, Knack is for a different audience than there used to be, right? Like,
right.
When Spyro came out, when Crash Bandicoot came out.
Look at where Mario is with, like, Mario Odyssey. Like, platformers have gone in a very different direction than, like, where Knack is playing in, like, a very, like, we look at Crash Bandicoot and that trilogy that's coming out. Wow, that is a...
That's like a military helicopter. They heard we were talking about Knack. Ah! They were like, no more talking about Knack.
Oh, that's the Knackadin. The Knackadin is in that. He's in the plane.
He's in there. but the thing I'm trying to get to is that actually Knack 2, one of the things that they wanted to do, one of the things that they heard about Knack 1 was like the combat is super basic.
Yes.
There's even a joke line in there. It's like, oh yeah, you saved the world with 3 punches and a kick or whatever, right? Which is like, yeah, okay. This game has skill trees.
All right.
It has like extra bonus moves.
Good.
I was doing the sorts of things that, it's not Devil May Cry,
right.
It's not God of War, but I was like using Knack's big arm to grab a dude and pull him in.
It keeps you interested.
And I did a little flash kick and then like did like a rolling charge at him afterwards.
Right.
And like comboing things together in that way.
Like the idea of like there could be a game that you play like with your kids where you can remain mechanically engaged, even if the game doesn't necessarily require
like
you to engage with all of that stuff to progress.
And I felt at home in it. There was a bit where he was like, oh, and up here is where you do the... I'm not going to do Mark Cerny. That was mean. I like Mark Cerny a lot. He's like, up here you can do a parry attack.
Right.
Or you do counterattack with a parry. And as he was saying it, a guy shot an arrow at me, and I just like, instinctively was like, oh, L1! And like parried it back at him. And like,
that's
shot
pretty good.
And he was like, oh, you did it. Like, yeah, action games have taught me that's how I parry. And
right.
It just worked. It just totally worked perfectly. And a lot of the combat was actually really fun and colorful and bright. And I actually had a really good time. The platforming was really responsive. The puzzle solutions of, like, are you big Knack, are you little Knack, were really good. And they made some changes that I think are really smart about showing off what the fantasy of their setting is, right?
Right.
So, like, I don't know if you played a lot of the first Knack.
Nope.
Okay, well, in
Wait for the PlayStation Plus Knack.
Okay.
Come on, add it.
You got extra artifacts, which are the little cubes and triangles and stuff and cones that made you a bigger Knack. And when you got hit, you lost those.
Right.
And there were sections...
Like the rings in Sonic or something like
totally.
That. Yeah.
And there were sections in that game where they gave you so many that no matter what, you get to be really big.
Right.
But you always were at threat of getting tiny. In this, once you grow inside of a level, you're going to return to that size.
Oh.
You still lose... As you lose
health,
like
a Katamari.
You lose size. Yeah, it's like Katamari. Except here,
Nakamari.
It's Nakamari. They could make that happen. They should make that happen.
Like I'd play that game.
I'd play that game. So there was one level in which I kind of went through the whole level as like a 5-foot Knack up to like a 7-foot Knack, and then you kind of get kicked out of that place and have to work your way back in. But when you go out, you find a bunch of artifacts. So you come back in a 17, 18-foot Knack.
Right.
And it's like, oh, this is like, I'm just going, barreling through these guys. And unlike the first Knack where you're fighting characters, in the first Knack, they're like kind of level up with you. So if you get big, you're fighting big guys. This is like, no, you're still going to fight a bunch of little guys. You just like kick the shit out of them. That not Mark Cerny did not say, and then you kick the shit out of them. Like, no. But it was really good. I actually had a really good time. Bright and colorful. There's
surprise. Like, for all, like, our, like, you
our
know. Yeah,
it.
Bullshit around Knack. Like,
what I'm saying is, Knack to Knack, back to back.
Yep.
A charity stream featuring Patrick Clever and Austin Walker.
You feel better about it.
I feel good about it.
Because, like, you get to Knack 2 and you're like.
Here's a tiny touch. That's like
hey, explain
things.
The co-op thing.
This
the
co-op
way,
thing.
Yeah.
So, it's a co-op game. Drop in, drop out.
Yeah.
You just hop in at any time. Local. Online, the only way to do it is to do the, what's the?
The share play?
The share play thing. Mark Cerny was like, with share play, you can just do that and it works.
So, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
That's cool.
That. That's cool. The way it works is, like, Knack is a big blocky guy of, like, gold and khaki and or tan cubes and red and blue cubes. And when you have a new player drop in, all the red cubes go into one Knack and all the blue cubes go into the other Knack. And so
that's,
they're like color-coded. Yep. And then when it's a cutscene, they just reform into one Knack. And like in the lore of the Knack universe, they're both Knack. Knack is powerful enough to split into two Knacks.
Oh.
So, that's,
so you're not two different characters. You're,
no,
you're just
it's not
Knack.
Knack one, you're just Knack.
We're Kids
Knack
don't together. Have to fight over
including
who's Knack. You're both Knack.
The quick time events where both players do the quick time events and have to get them right.
Okay, all right.
And also, here's a note. Here's the thing I liked about these quick time events.
Yep.
I'm saying this in 2017. Yep. The buttons correspond to what they're supposed to correspond to. So it was a quick time event where it was like you do like the flash kick and then you do the body stomp where you could like splash down. And that was just do the buttons to do that normally, but now it's in slow motion with a special camera.
Oh. You know I mean? Oh, so it's like the actual like
right.
If in the main game you the you same hit, moves, so you're just doing it in a much splashier.
You hit R1 to shrink down to tiny now yeah. So you can get into tiny spots. There was a bit where like I was running to do like being thrown through the air and there was a little hole I had to get through. And you hit R1 to shrink into little mode, which is what you do anyway in the main game. Do that, and it works. I like that. That was a nice way of like making it not just feel random.
That is, that's smart. I wish more games did stuff like that.
QuickTime events are in Spider-Man.
Well, it's funny. So they, yeah. So we saw like a slightly longer version of the presentation,
sure.
But not any. You know, if you haven't seen this, like. It's not going to change too much.
Okay.
But we get like a presentation from the creative director, Brian Inahar, guy I go way back with. Very weird to see him. He used to work for like EGM and stuff like that way back in the day. Anyway, they're clearly aware up front that like some of the reaction to that trailer was like, oh, like I hope this game isn't all like quick time events or big splashy scenes.
Yeah.
And they made it clear like up front, like, look, we know people love Spider-Man 2. The video game for PS2, which
that's
is like the
good game.
The definition of like the previous definition of like the best Spider-Man game that like
right.
nailed
for a while it was like the best superhero game.
Yeah,
it was, like, it was like oh hey, they're gonna be good superhero games.
It mechanically found a way to present Spider-Man
right.
and to present Spider-Man mechanically. Like the core to that is to be able to go throughout a city and explore and like just feel like you're Spider-Man.
Totally.
So they were like very upfront saying like the vast majority of the game is exploring a giant. City
totally.
In which you get to poke around, see things, play with things. Like,
did you see any of that?
No, they were just kind of giving. They gave us some examples. Like, hey, we're swinging around. Like, you'll see some stuff happening on a rooftop. Like, you can start to imagine how that stuff puts together.
Right.
But like, and they said they spent a lot of time making sure that when Spider-Man spits out his webs to like swing around,
hand spit. Yeah, I got it.
Look, mm-hmm. look in the Marvelverse. Yeah, it's deep cut. Yeah. And well they didn't want it to just be like where he's like just shooting them in the air and the game is just like he's like
they connect
to the buildings every single time. Like that is how they built, like it was a small touch, but I think says a lot about the kind of game that they're building.
Totally.
And they said like, you know, one of the things we talked about in the podcast was how Spider-Man the trailer made like a big moment of like Spider-Man is trying to save the people around him is a result of
the bad guy.
Right,
but
the result,
help
like
people.
The consequences of his actions, like if he hits a crane and the thing falls off, like he's going to try and grab that. And so he said the trailer was trying to show that, but then mechanically that will be represented by like, there won't be moments where like you hit a guy off a roof. Like they're building systems in which like
that shows up in that fight.
Yeah, there's very briefly one. He's like, they have like one of their big things has been like making sure that it's represented throughout the game. Like Spider-Man will not
versus
kill someone.
The Batman system.
I think there will still be moments where like, well, okay, I don't think Spider-Man's gonna like take a head and like smash it to the ground or like suddenly have, you know, a Batmobile with like a Gatling
gun
on it.
Maybe?
So I don't think it's like that. I mean, I think there's still like he's gonna crush the dude. That you might think like, well, you might have a concussion, but like, it's not going to throw a guy off a roof, stuff like that. They're very conscious of that. They think that's the core of the character. And one of the questions I did ask was like, I'm sure you're not talking about like the connection with Miles, but like one of the biggest reactions to that trailer was the
Miles
like
Morales.
A nod to Miles. And I was like, my guess is one that you're not putting a nod to that just as a nod because that would be bad.
That would be bad.
I said like, if you are doing that,
don't
rethink that.
Right. This game isn't out till next year.
Yeah.
Fix it.
But I was like, even though you're not saying the context of like how he presented the story, like discuss like the importance. And like they said, like one of the reasons they wanted to include that was like Peter Parker is historically what people identify with Spider-Man. But for like a young audience, especially like certain types of audience, like Miles is their Spider-Man.
Yes.
Like Miles is them and represents Spider-Man to them, and they want him in the story. And there were a lot of heavy insinuations that. He is going to be a core part of that story.
There seem to be some insinuations that
you might be able to play as him.
Play as Miles Morales.
I don't want to like put words in their mouth,
knows?
But there was definitely like a as much as they could say wink wink nod that like it's going to be like that was put there as a like stay tuned, but like they're taking it seriously and like that's really exciting.
Yeah.
Like that could be a part of it. So I'm excited, like, you know, open world Spider-Man, yeah. like Miles, like they're saying all the right things. Yeah. And also, one of the things they said was they're like trying to go deep into like the Rogue Gallery. Like it's not just right. Dr. Octopus,
saw,
it's
I don't even know
Mr. Negative, like
sure.
whatever.
I love Spider-Man. I grew up reading Spider-Man comics. I don't know who Mr. Negative is.
Yeah.
I'm happy about that. I don't want to fight Rhino again. I fought Rhino, Patrick, I fought Rhino so many times. Shocker, I'm done with you.
Electro Man.
That's not right.
That's close.
He got the stars on his face.
Yeah, it wasn't Jamie Foxx played him.
I fought you. Mysterio, maybe. Mysterio could be fun.
So I think they're saying like there will be. There's a heavy mixture of, like stuff that people have seen before, but also right. they want to like just to show people something new.
Good. Yeah.
Is like here are some other sort
that.
Of characters. So
totally.
I'm saying the right things. I'm excited to see more, and it sounds like. Like, really soon, we will know a lot more
cool.
about what that game is.
I'm excited to see more about that. I think it's going to do it. We didn't see anything else.
Yeah, I saw, like, Star Child very quickly, but we can podcast
about
that. Yeah.
For now, that's going to do it for us. As always, check out youtube.com/waypointvice, waypoint.vice.com for everything we do. We'll see you soon with some more stuff. Also, twitch.tv/waypoint every night this week for...
every night?
Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday for the podcast.
Every night. We're never stopping.
Never, every
podcast
night.
Forever.
Dinner and podcasts. I don't know a word that's
the opposite of Breakfast and Battlegrounds. It's dinner and podcasts.
Dinner and podcast. Twilight and podcasts. It's not. I'm not going to get there.
We got to get out of here.
I'm going to go. It's going to do it for us. Peace.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.